7, book of Ezekiel, chapter 47. Read the first 12 verses. Afterward, this is Ezekiel speaking, of course. He, the angel of the Lord, which I believe is the Lord himself, he brought me again unto the door of the house. And behold, waters issued out from under the threshold of the house eastward. For the forefront of the house stood toward the east. And the waters came down from under from the right side of the house at the south side of the altar. Then brought he me out of the way of the gate northward, and led me about the way without unto the other gate, by the way that looketh eastward. And behold, there ran out waters on the right side. And when the man that had the line in his hand went forth eastward, he measured 1,000 cubits, about 1,500 feet. And he brought me through the waters, and the waters were to the ankles. Again he measured 1,000, brought me through the waters, and the waters were to the knees. Again he measured 1,000 and brought me through. The waters were to the loins. Afterward he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not pass, for the waters were risen, waters to swim in, a river that could not be passed over. And he said unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen this? Then he brought me and caused me to return to the brink of the river. And when I had returned, behold, at the bank of the river were very many trees, on the one side and on the other. Then said he unto me, These waters issue out toward the east country, and go down into the desert, and into the sea, which being brought forth into the sea, the waters shall be healed. And it shall come to pass that everything that liveth, which moveth whithersoever the river shall come, shall live. And there shall be a very great multitude of fish, because these waters shall come thither. For they shall be healed, and everything shall live whither the river cometh. And it shall come to pass that the fishers shall stand upon it from Engedi unto Engallium. They shall be a place to spread forth nets. Their fish shall be according to their kinds, as the fish of the great sea, exceeding many. But the miry places thereof and the marshes thereof shall not be healed. They shall be given to salt. And by the river upon the bank thereof, on this side and on that side, shall grow all trees for meat, whose leaves shall not fade, neither shall the fruit thereof be consumed. It shall bring forth new fruit according to his months, because their waters they issued out of the sanctuary, and the fruit thereof shall be for meat, and the leaf thereof for medicine. By way of background, if we go over to the book of Ezekiel, chapter 1, keep a mark there in Ezekiel 47, we'll be going back. The name Ezekiel means God strengthens me. And Ezekiel, of course, was one of those who were carried into Babylonian captivity. According to chapter 1 and verse 3, Ezekiel was a priest, the son of Buzi. We see that in Ezekiel 1 and verse 3. We see the book picks up in chapter 1 in the 30th year. And in verse 2, we see it is the 5th year of King Jehoiachin's captivity, or the 5th year of Babylonian captivity. So if the 30th year of Ezekiel 1 and verse 1, if it refers to Ezekiel's age, That would mean he would have been 25 when he was taken captive. And it means he would have been 30 when the Lord called him to preach the word, is what we read here in Ezekiel 1 through 3. We read in verse 4 of chapter 1, while in captivity, it says, the hand of the Lord was there. That is, in Babylonian captivity, the hand of the Lord was there upon him. There's a message there. Even though they were terrible circumstances, the hand of God was upon Ezekiel. Following that statement, we see that God gave Ezekiel a vision. That vision is recorded in verses 4 through 21. It's a vision concerning the providence of God in a storm. You'll notice in verse 4, and I looked, and behold, a whirlwind. That whirlwind, of course, is referring to Babylonian captivity. That the storm is referring to the fact of Babylonian captivity. And as you read through verses 4 through 21, you see the providence of God. He has a vision of the providence of God in the storm. Also, in that storm, he has a vision of the throne of God. We see that in verses 22 through verse 27. And then in verse 28, he sees a rainbow encircling that throne. A rainbow encircling the throne of God. A rainbow, of course, is a symbol of God's grace. It's a symbol of God's promise. So in this vision of Ezekiel chapter 1, we have God's sovereign providence, grace, control in a storm. And this is to comfort Ezekiel in this. He would be in the fifth year of captivity at this time. Now, the effect that this vision had upon Ezekiel is recorded there in verse 28, the last verse of the chapter. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face. And then in Ezekiel chapter 2, God told Ezekiel's on the ground, he's on his face. God told Ezekiel to rise. And you see there that the Holy Spirit entered into Ezekiel and raised him up. Notice, and he said unto me, Son of man, stand upon thy feet, and I will speak unto thee. And the Spirit entered into me when he spake, or while he was speaking unto me, and set me upon my feet. God told him to stand, but we see God caused him to stand. Now there's a message there also. And then we see that he heard him that spake unto him. And then we see the call there in verse 3 and also through the remaining of that chapter and into chapter 3. So God calls Ezekiel. Keep in mind what is very fresh on Ezekiel's mind when God called him was this whirlwind and the providence of God working in the whirlwind. God is in control of the whirlwind and God's grace and God's promise in the whirlwind. And then in chapters 2 and 3, he is told very plainly the difficulty of his task. He says, I want you to go and preach to a people, and it's going to be a stiff-necked people. They're not going to listen to what you say. And he goes on and tells him the difficulty of the task, tells him that he would encounter great resistance. But though Ezekiel would minister in the darkest hours of Judah's history, he has the assurance from chapter 1 that God's in control. That God's in control. He has the assurance of God's grace, and he has the assurance of God's enablement. And then in chapters 4 and 5, Ezekiel begins his ministry. He begins his ministry with four sermons that declared God's judgment. He would then continue through chapter 35, with messages of condemnation, messages of rebuke, messages of woe. This continues all the way through chapter 35. Then beginning with chapter 36, going through 39, chapter 39, Ezekiel begins to preach messages of God's restoring grace. Then we come to chapter 40. And notice in chapter 40, in the 5th and 20th year of our captivity. So it's 20 years later from where we started in chapter 1. So he's now in the 25th year of captivity. And it was at this time that Ezekiel is ushered by God to the door of God's house, the temple. And there he is taken through the temple. He's given an amazing vision of the future temple and the future of God's people. And from this point to the end of the book, I believe our visions of the millennium and the coming glory that we experience in the millennium. But in chapter 47 in our text, we see afterward, that is, he is brought again to the door of the house. He had been taken through the temple, he'd been taken up into a mountain, and he'd been taken back to the temple, through the temple, and now again he's at the door of the house, which is the Holy of Holies. And he envisions a time. God gives him a vision of a time when God would bring about absolute healing to the nation, and blessing would flow from God's throne and refresh the land. And though that prophecy is for the nation of Israel, and it will be literally fulfilled one day, there is also spiritual application, as there is in all Scripture. There is spiritual application for you and I today. We want to speak this evening on God's glorious spiritual river. I love this chapter. I love these verses. I think about them often. I've only preached on these verses a few times, once since I've been here. But we have a picture here of a river. And it's a river that represents spiritual blessings. So I want to begin by looking at Ezekiel's vision of this river. The first thing is that he was made aware of these waters. Not only was he made aware of these waters, he was brought to see these waters. Ezekiel was brought by God. You'll notice a phrase that occurs throughout the chapter. We see it in verse 1. We see it in verse 2. We see it in verse 3, verse 4, verse 6. And then we see it 26 times throughout the book of Ezekiel. And that phrase is, he brought me. He brought me. That is, God ushered Ezekiel. God got a hold of Ezekiel. It's a phrase that is indicative of the leadership of God. He brought me. And it was then, as God brought Ezekiel, that Ezekiel was made aware of these waters, and that Ezekiel was brought to see, and not only brought to see these waters, but brought to experience something very amazing, something extraordinary. We see it in verse 5, a river that could not be passed over. It's still so today. If you and I, as God's people, would follow the leadership of God, you'll be amazed at what you'll be made aware of. Just following the leadership of God, he brought me. Not only will we be made aware of things, we will be brought to see things. He was brought to see these waters. Not only that, he was brought to experience. And if you and I would follow the Lord, we would be made aware of wonderful things. We would be made to see and experience that which is truly amazing and extraordinary. Now, geographers describe a river as having a source, a course, and a force. And Ezekiel sees all three of these things. Notice the source of the river, verse 1. Waters issued or emerged and flowed out from under the threshold of the house of God. The threshold being the door of the Holy of Holies, which is the place where we find the mercy seat, which is representative of the throne of God. So the source of these waters is the throne of God. That's the source of these waters. John was given sight of such in Revelation 22 and verse 1. John said, "And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb." I believe that's what Ezekiel sees here in Ezekiel chapter 47. And these waters, which began at the throne of God, by the time we get to verse 5, is a river that could not be passed, which speaks of the expanse of the waters. Speaks of the fact that they're beyond description. No one can pass these waters. We see the course of these waters. We see in verse 1 again, and the waters came down. The waters came down. We read in verse 8 that these waters issue or flow out toward the east country, the east region, and go down into the desert, into the Jordan Valley, and go into the sea. So he's describing the course of these waters. We see again they go down into the Jordan Valley or into the desert and into the sea. In other words, these waters in their course find their way to the lowest and most needy places in the world. They began at the throne of God, and they flow to the lowest and most needy places of the world. And these waters that Ezekiel saw would become a river that could not be passed over. And they would flow down into the world, this sin-cursed, barren, unfruitful, unsatisfying world. Notice that these waters, in verse 1, came down by way of the altar. Now, remember in Ezekiel 1, verse 3, we saw that Ezekiel was a priest, the son of Buzi. Being a priest, he notice right away the close proximity of the waters to the altar. He was very interested. Being a priest, he's very interested in the altar. The altar, of course, in the Old Testament speaks of the sufferings and the sacrifice and the death of Jesus Christ out of love for his people. And the truth is, the only way these waters can reach this world, the only way these waters can reach the lowest places and the most needy places of this world is by way of the altar, by way of Jesus Christ. These waters which came down from the throne of God, by way of the altar, again became a river that could not be passed over. So we have the source, we have the course. We also see that these waters have a force. There's no need for anyone to add anything into these waters to give it force, to give it size, to give it power. When it leaves the throne of God, it possesses all the power that it needs. It possesses everything it needs because of where it comes from. That's where it gets its force, its origin, the throne of God. So these waters flow down from the throne of God by way of the altar, go down into the desert, become a river that cannot be passed over. And these waters, according to verse 9, have life-giving power. Verse 9, and it shall come to pass that everything that liveth, which moveth, whithersoever the rivers shall come, shall live. These waters that flow from the throne of God have life-giving power. You also see from verses 8 and verse 9 that these waters that flow down into the low places and the needy places, they have power to heal. We see that in verse 8. We see it again in verse 9. But not only that, they have power to revive. Notice in verse 9, middle part of the verse, and there shall be a very great multitude of fish, because these waters shall come thither, for they shall be healed, and everything shall live whither the river cometh. That is, the river revives everything. The river has a reviving power. It has life-giving power. It has healing power. It has reviving power. It flows from the throne of God by way of the altar, makes its way down into the most needy places of the world, the lowest places. And it gives life. And it heals. And it revives. But not only that, we see that it has the power to bring forth fruit and freshness. Verse 12. And by the river upon the bank thereof, on this side and on that side, shall grow all trees for meat, whose leaves shall not fade, neither shall the fruit thereof be consumed. It shall bring forth new fruit. We see there's this river brings great fruitfulness to life. Everywhere these waters flow, except for those places where God ordained it not to be so, according to Ezekiel 47. Everywhere these waters flowed, fruit sprang up. We read in Psalm 46, if we turn there, keep a mark again, Ezekiel 47. Psalm 46. In verse 4, there is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God. There is a river. Ezekiel, under the leadership of God, was made aware of that river, was brought by God to see that river, was brought by God to experience that river. There is a river. And this river, not only does it give life, not only does it heal, not only does it revive, not only does it cause fruit to spring up, it makes glad. This is a river that brings gladness. It is a river of spiritual strength. It is a river of comfort. It is a river of assurance. So we have to ask ourselves, what are these waters? What are these waters that Ezekiel is saying? What are these waters that flow down from the throne of God and go by the way of the altar and go down into the desert and become a river that cannot be passed? What are these waters? Well, we read in Psalm 65 and verse 9, the river of God, which is full of water. There is a river. And it is the river of God. And it's full of water. What kind of water? Life-giving water. Healing water. Reviving water. Fruit-producing water. Water that brings gladness. There is a river. the river of God, which is full of water. Psalm 36 and verse 8. Psalm 36 verse 8. They shall be abundantly satisfied with the fatness of thy house, and thou shalt make them drink of the river of thy pleasures. It is a river of God's pleasures. We notice again these waters which flow from the temple. That temple is the same place. Notice in Ezekiel 43 and verse 5, the same place that the glory of God filled. Ezekiel 43 verse 5. So the Spirit took me up and brought me into the inner court, and behold, the glory of the Lord filled the house. That's where these waters come from. They come from the temple, the very place that the glory of God fills. The glory of God is His beauty. It's His magnificence. It is the person of God radiating forth. And I believe these waters are connected to the glory of God. I believe if you get in these waters, you'll see the beauty of the Lord. You'll see the magnificence of the Lord. They are connected with the glory of God. The glory of God is something that can be felt. We learn this from the book of Exodus. In other words, the glory of God is something that leaves an impression. That's common sense. If the glory of God is the person of God radiating forth, you're going to feel that. And it's going to leave an impression. So these waters are connected to the glory of God. It is in these waters that we can experience the glory of God. Is in these life-giving and healing and reviving and fruit-producing waters that flow from the throne of God by way of the altar and go down into the desert and become a river that cannot be passed over. The glory of God is a river that cannot be passed over. But I believe these waters represent the glory of God. They speak of all things concerning God. They speak of the Holy Spirit. They speak of the grace of God. They speak of the love of God, the peace of God, the Word of God, all the blessings of salvation. They begin at the throne of God. But by the time again we get to verse 5, it's a river. It cannot be passed over. So these waters represent glorious things, spiritual things. Now we want to notice that Ezekiel is brought to personally experience the river. If there was a stream of water anywhere in the world that could literally give life, that could literally bring healing and restoration, that could give transformation and renewal and recovery for whoever stepped into it, everyone would make arrangements to get to that river. It would be the most popular place in all the world. There is such a river. There is such a river. Again, Psalm 46 and verse 4, there is a river. There is a river, the streams whereof make glad the city of God. In a world where there are many rivers that are muddy and that will kill you, that are poisonous, thanks be to God, there is a river. And it's not muddy, and it won't kill you. It'll give you life. It'll give you healing. It'll give you reviving. It'll cause you to produce fruit. The origin of this river is the throne of God. It makes its way down by way of the altar. It makes its way down into the desert. And eventually becomes a river that cannot be passed over. Again, a river that can bring life and healing and restoration, transformation and renewal, recovery. Whatever it is we need. In a world that is filled with trials and tribulations and afflictions and difficulties and struggles, there is a river. There is the river of God. And it is filled with water. In a world that is filled with opposition and hatred, there is a river. In a world that is cold, in a world that is spiritually indifferent, in a world that is sinful and defiling, there is a river, the river of God. Its origin, the throne of God, flows down by way of the altar. And in that river is everything we need. Now we'll notice in our text, Ezekiel is made aware of the river. He saw the river. And he's brought to a point where he can experience the river. In Ezekiel's vision, there's a man with a measuring line in his hand. And he measured 1,000 cubits down the river. And he did this 4 times. Again, a cubit is about 18 inches from the fingers to the elbow. And it would be about 1,000 cubits would be 1,500 feet. You multiply that by 4, you have 6,000 feet. There are 5,280 feet in a mile. So Ezekiel is going down this river over a mile. A little over a mile. And it's this, and it's God who's bringing him down this river. We see this in verses 3 through 5. And the further Ezekiel followed this man, and it's so with us today, the further we follow God, just as the further Ezekiel followed this man, the deeper the waters became. And the greater Ezekiel's experience became. I believe that every day we can experience this river. But we have to follow. Again, that phrase, he brought me. You have to follow the Lord. You won't get to this river going the opposite direction. You have to follow the Lord. So this man measures 1,000 cubits. Verse 3, and the man that had the line in his hand went forth eastward. He measured 1,000 cubits. And he brought me through the waters. That is about 1,500 feet downriver. He brought me. And the waters were to the ankles. As Ezekiel is walking that 1,500 feet, as he's in the water to the ankles, he has some experience of these waters. But very, very little of Ezekiel is covered. Only his feet. The waters only come to his ankles. The waters have some effect upon him. If you walk in water up to your ankles, the water has some effect. But very little. But very little. There are waters which flow from the throne of God. They make their way down by way of the altar, go down into the desert. These waters have, again, life-giving, healing power. We should never be content just to get our feet wet in these waters. Never. Never be content with just getting your feet wet. We're talking about the river of the glories of God. And some are content to just wade in the waters. This man measured us another 1,500 feet downriver in verse 4. Ezekiel is brought through the waters, it says. And the depth of the waters is now to his knees. Now, if you get in water up to your ankles, the water has little effect. You get in water up to your knees, it's starting to affect your walk a little more. The waters now have a little bit more influence and power upon your walk. Not only that, but a little bit more of Ezekiel is covered. But you can still see most of him. There are waters which flow down from the throne of God by way of the altar, go down into the desert. And again, these waters have life-giving power, healing power, reviving power, fruit-producing power. Don't be content to live in knee-deep water. But follow this man with the measuring line, another 1,500 feet down. And we see that in verse 4. Ezekiel is led approximately another 1,500 feet downriver through the waters. And the depth of the waters is now to the waist. Ezekiel is feeling a little more of the effect of the water. It's beginning to affect your walk even more. The waters now waist deep have even more influence in your walk and more power over your walk. In other words, the deeper you get into the water, the stronger the influence they have. The influence of spiritual things in our lives tell us where we are in the water. Some aren't even in the water. Some just sit at the bank all day long. Others will wait a little while. But the influence of spiritual things in our lives tell us where we are in the water. So there's Ezekiel. He's in water now, waist deep. The water now has a much greater effect upon his walk. And the waters have now captured a larger part of Ezekiel's thinking than they did before. And now we see much less of Ezekiel. You see, the more influence spiritual things has in our lives, the less we see of ourselves. So now Ezekiel's a little deeper in the water. And you see, now you only see about half of Ezekiel. But there's still further to go. So there are waters which flow from the throne of God, make their way by the altar, go down into the desert. And these waters have life-giving, healing, reviving, fruit-producing powers. Should we be content to live in the waist-deep waters? When the man with the measuring line measures another 1,500 feet down, and Ezekiel follows him there in verse 5, and now it's a river that I could not pass or cross. It is a river that I could not pass over. For the waters were risen. Waters to swim in. A river that could not be passed over. He's now in over his head. A lot of people are in over their head, but not in this river. But Ezekiel is now in over his head. How did he get there? Following that man. as he measured downriver, Ezekiel just kept on following the Lord. And you just keep on following, step by step, step by step. You just keep on following, and pretty soon you'll be in over your head spiritually. That's a good place to be. His feet are no longer touching the bottom. He has ceased to stand on his own two feet. He has ceased to stand on his own feet. And now, oh, we see so much less of Ezekiel than we did when he's in up to his ankles, or when he was in up to his knees, or up to his waist. He's now swimming. You can't see very much of Ezekiel now. The waters have even greater influence upon his life. He's now swimming. Where is he swimming? You follow God, and you won't end up swimming in the muddy rivers of this world. You end up swimming in the life-giving waters of God, in the healing waters of God, in the reviving waters of God, in the fruit-producing waters of God. How do you get there? By following God, by following this man downriver. This is what Ezekiel is doing. He's swimming in this river. This is a place of exhilaration. This is a thrilling place to be swimming in this river. This is where fullness is found. Again, that river of God, the waters are full. This is where joy is found. To swim in these rivers, this is what it means to live life abundantly. Keep on following God in obedience, and you'll be in over your head spiritually. You refuse to follow God, and you follow the world, and you follow the dictates of your own will and the dictates of your own reasoning, and you'll get in over your head, but not in this river. You'll only get in over your head in this river by following that man downriver as he measures. And Ezekiel just kept on walking. Now notice in closing, verse 6. And he said unto me, keep in mind, Ezekiel has gone 6,000 feet approximately downriver. He has gone from his ankles to his knees to his waist, to swimming in a river that is so wide it cannot possibly pass over. In other words, you can swim here all day long. You can swim here all your life. With that in mind, he said unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen this? Hast thou seen this? He is saying, Ezekiel, do you grasp the magnitude of what I'm showing you? Ezekiel, do you get it? Do you get it? Do you see the wonder of what I am showing you? Ezekiel, do you understand the opportunity of what I'm showing you? You can go from ankle deep to knee deep to waist deep to swimming. Do you understand, Ezekiel, the opportunity? And this is in Babylonian captivity. Do you understand the opportunity that you have? And I believe every day I have the opportunity to swim in this river. And I believe I will swim in that river if I just keep on following God through the day. That's how you get there. As this man with the measuring line is leading Ezekiel, you see another common phrase, through the waters, is as if he's saying, come on, Ezekiel. Come on. The water's ankle deep. Come on, Ezekiel. Come a little further. Just trust me. Take another step, Ezekiel. Pretty soon it's knee deep. And he goes another 1,500 feet. And this man, it's as if he's saying, come on, Ezekiel, just take another step in following me. And then it's waist deep. It's come on, Ezekiel. And it's harder to walk in waist deep water than it is in ankle deep water. 1,500 feet he's walking in waist deep water. He's saying, just take another step, Ezekiel. Just take another step. Come and trust me. I believe we receive the same call every day. We receive the call that says, you need to look to me, you need to trust me, you need to abide in me, you need to receive from me. And when we do these things, the deeper and deeper we go spiritually, and the less and less and less of self is visible. So I ask you tonight, how much of God are you experiencing in your life? How much of God do you experience in your life? Most people here are theologically sound, and that's good. That's very good. But the real question is, how much do we experience God in our lives? How much do we experience these waters? You know something else about these waters? The further, the deeper you get, the harder it is to jump out. Try being in waters deep enough to swim and just jump out of it. When you're in waters just up to your ankles, it's pretty easy to jump out of the water. Why is it that some people, they walk a little ways and then they jump out and they walk in the world? It's because they never get in the deep waters. They don't get there. They stay in the ankle deep waters. And they walk around there for a while and then they jump out. And then they go swimming in the muddy waters of the world. And then they think, well, I'm going to get right with God. And they go back and they wade in the water some more. Then they jump out again. You get into the knee-deep water, it gets a little harder to jump out. You get in the waist-deep water, it's even a little harder. And by the time you get into the waters you can swim in, it's pretty hard to jump out. That's where we want to be. We want to be in these waters that you swim in. And then there are people, they have trials in their life, but they just keep going. They just keep enjoying the blessings of God. They just keep on enjoying God. Why is that? Because they're swimming. They're in deeper waters. They're in deeper waters. How did they get there? Well, they were raised right. No, that's not it. That's not what gets you into deeper waters. Well, they caught the brakes. That's foolishness. They followed God. You follow God in obedience, just as Ezekiel followed this man downriver. You'll get to the deep water. But you got to just keep on following. You can't just follow a couple steps and then turn back. And that's what many people do. So, the deeper we go, the less and less self is visible, and the more difficult it is to jump out. Again, this is our privilege, this river. We need to ask ourselves, and you can tell the difference. I mean, I can tell the difference physically if someone's walking in ankle deep water and someone's out there swimming. A big difference. Huge difference. And that difference shows spiritually. Those who just wade around in ankle deep waters, it shows. Whether you know it or not, it shows. And those who swim, that shows too. That shows too. Tragedy may come in their lives, but you know they're going to be all right because they swim in the deep waters. There are people sitting here right now. Well, there are people in Home Baptist Church and in all churches. It scares me to think what would happen if a real tragedy came in your life. I don't think you could handle it. Because you live in ankle-deep water, or you live on the bank of the river. But then there are others I don't worry about so much. Because I know it may be difficult, but I know they'll be all right. Because they swim in the deep waters. That's where they live. Oh, every now and then we all get out. But for the most part, that's where they live. Swimming in the deep waters. Again, there are the rivers of the world. And there is the river of God. So we need to ask ourselves, which of these has the most influence in our lives? Again, the deeper you get into the water, the more influence that water has upon your walk. What influences our walk more? The world or God? Carnal things or spiritual things? There are the rivers of the world. There is the river of God. I ask you tonight, are you willing, no matter what? Sometimes it's a little slower than other times. But no matter what, just keep on following the Lord in obedience. And I promise you, if you do that, you'll go deeper and deeper and deeper into the glorious river of God. And I promise you, the deeper you get into that river, the more you will enjoy life. It won't take away your trials, but the more you will enjoy life. Again, this river originates from the throne of God. It goes by the way of the altar. And I believe that's where we gain access to it. At the altar. The altar is a place of willing surrender. I'm not talking about anything up front. I'm talking about that spiritual altar. Because we will only follow as we surrender. So that's where we get in this river. You cannot bypass the altar. You have to surrender. And being surrendered, you follow. And as you follow the Lord, you advance. You advance spiritually. And the more influence the spiritual has upon your life. So there is a river. There is a river of God. River of God's glory. You and I that are saved, where are we in that river? Are you just sitting on the bank, content? Perhaps there was a time you were in the river, but now you're in the rivers of the world. Why would you stay there? Why would you stay there? God brought you from the mud. Why? Why would you stay in the muddy rivers when there is a glorious river? So it seems to me, if you know anything about this glorious river of God, you're going to find your way back to that river. There's only one way to do that, and that's follow the Lord. He'll lead you to that river. And you start out ankle-deep water, but you just keep on following. You just keep on following. You don't just stand still. What would have happened if Ezekiel got into ankle-deep water and the man with the measuring line kept on measuring and said, "Come on, Ezekiel, come on," and Ezekiel just stood there? Well, that's where he would have been. Ankle-deep water. There's no... I mean, it's better than the muddy rivers. But just standing in ankle-deep water, there's not a whole lot of joy there. I would think you'd get tired of that after a while, and that's what happens. And that's why people jump out and go back to the muddy rivers. They don't get deep enough, and they get tired of spiritual things. That's what God asked Israel. He said, "Wherein have I wearied thee? What have I done that made you tired of me?" And that's where many are. They get tired of God. They get tired of spiritual things. They go out and live in the muddy rivers. They get convicted to some degree, and they decide, or they use the church as some magic formula. Well, I'll go back and my life will be all better. And they sing a few hymns. They enjoy it. But after a while, they get tired of it because their heart's back in the mud. And instead, they just need to keep, when that man just measures down the river, he says, "Come on, come on. You just need to keep on following." And before you know it, you're swimming. What a wonderful place to live. Swimming in the river of God. And I believe there are people here that are doing that. I believe there are people here in ankle-deep water. And we don't hold it against you if you're in ankle-deep water, as long as you're moving forward. But don't get stuck there. There are people who might be in knee-deep water. There are people who might be in waist-deep water. And there are people swimming. And once you begin to swim, you don't want to leave there. You don't want to leave there. That's where you want to live. So where is it? Where are we in this river? Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse of song. Let's all stand. Brother Larry, lead us in singing.